that position really allows you to play fast. You can be aggressive in the run game because a lot of times, just the distance I'm off from the line of scrimmage, I'm the extra unblocked defender. And then the pass game, that playing that rover role, you're kind of that middle of the field. So you're what the offense most likely like wants to target a lot of times. So that just allowed me a lot more opportunities to get around the ball, get more experience, and just think about what the offense is trying, what they're showing me in their formations and their situations and what they're trying to attack.
It's Dylan Thienemann, your brand new safety for the Chicago Bears, talking about how the rover position, playing it at Oregon, really helped him out. And he mentioned it too, right? He said center fielder. You hear certain nuances like that when talking about him. Again, I have zero problem with Dylan Thienemann. He wants to be amazing. I'm here for it. I'm all here for it. And, you know, in talking to some people, they're like, Gabe, if the Bears won the North and won a playoff game, and they added a starting safety and what will be a starting center, will be eventually, don't get greedy. That's what they're saying to me. And one Mark Grody once told me, it's okay to be greedy. And that's how I feel right now. I want it to be a little greedier. I want it to get a little more. Mike Renner said Sam Rosa's favorite pick of the Chicago Bears. You passed up Dylan Thienemann for that one? But again, I think you have to have the optimism there because that's what you do as a fan. You're just optimistic about every player. He's a dog. Look how fast he is. He's going to be killing in the return game. Devin DuVernay is gone. So someone needs to return punts, and you wanted someone that was a sure thing. And remember the last time the Bears did that? Does anybody remember the last time the Bears drafted in the third round to get a punt returner that they really liked? Anybody? Velus Jones Jr.? Anyone? But again, you want to be optimistic about those things. And the one thing you can be optimistic about is Dylan Thienemann and the debate whether he is an impact player or will be an impact player, or was he simply just a luxury pick for a team that feels as though they're good, a coach that thinks their offense will be better. It's one thing to listen to me. It's another thing to hear from actual people that coached in the NFL. And Dave Wonstadt came on afterwards, and you know he gave his opinion, and I wanted you guys to hear about Dylan Thienemann and his role on this team.
So excited about it. Rightfully so. Yeah. Rightfully so. I mean, he got an impact player, yeah. And he knows it. A guy he can count on that's going to play a long time. I mean, it's a home run.
So you like this pick from the beginning?
I did. I said this last night on two or three shows. If you went position by position, and, you know, obviously doing the Big Ten TV every week, I've been following this kid for a long time. But I'll say this, guys. We were talking beforehand. I talked to an NFL head coach that told me that they had a serious debate in their draft room with him and Caleb Downs.
Wow.
I mean, that's how high regard they had for this kid.
And you heard it a lot, right? Dave Wonstadt talking about the comparison between Caleb Downs, Dylan Thienemann, and how people just didn't necessarily want to make that leap, right? They knew Downs, they knew who he was, but to take another safety, the second safety in the first round. I mean, ultimately, that's what the Bears did. But listen, Wani's a defensive-minded coach, so he's watching tape through a different lens. And so when he says something like that, you don't take it with a grain of salt. You listen. And, I mean, he's right. Dylan Thienemann, think about this, Bears fans, for a second. If Dylan Thienemann is exactly what everyone says he is, how exciting will that be for you as a Bears fan, knowing, you know, that position is shored up? The guy's a ball. I think his best attribute is tackling. I know he's all over the place. You know, he had 10 tackles for a loss throughout his career. 106 tackles his first season with Purdue. I mean, this guy likes to get after it. And that, you know, and then wrapping up, like, just technique is there for me when I'm looking at Dylan Thienemann. But he was the only one, Coach Wonstadt, to the Dylan Thienemann selection. Brad Biggs jumped on the score as well and gave his thoughts on the new safety for the Bears.
I think the Bears felt like there was about a 50-50 chance he'd be on the board. But let's keep in mind, I think three safeties have gone around one over the last 6 years. So it's a spot where, you know, teams are really going to be hesitant to pull the trigger on guys at that position, and obviously the Cowboys made a move early on, I believe at number 11, even traded up one spot. They pulled a Ryan Pace, and they moved up one spot. Maybe they actually needed to do that they get Caleb Downs. But Tiedemann, like, it's a really good fit for Dennis Allen, and they could have drafted any position on defense last night and said, hey, we're upgrading what we're doing on defense. If Tiedemann is the top-ranked guy on their board at that time at 25, it makes total sense because they literally entered the draft, in my mind, needing an upgrade across the board on defense. So that works out. They love the football character. They love the speed. They love the tape. They feel like this is the kind of guy that can be a leader into the future. So I think it's going to be exciting for Bears fans to kind of get to know him a little bit, and he'll be at the facility later on this afternoon. He's a Midwest guy, which we know was part of Dave's attraction to him as a prospect that checked an important box for Dave. But hey, we got to tip our caps to him for nailing the pick in advance.
Brad Biggs right there talking on The Score about, you know, just in depth where, you know, he's right. He mentions the amount of safeties that people have taken in the first round over the last 6 years. It's that way for a reason, right? You feel like, because I was, you know, if you crunch the numbers, you know, hundreds of schools in college football, and just think about all the secondaries, and there's got to be, you know, 5-6 dogs out there that play the safety position for their respective schools out of the hundreds, right? And so I think that's where, you know, those positions, the deviation between tier one and tier two maybe isn't as big as that of a defensive lineman.
The best defenses usually have two or three trained killers.
Exactly. And maybe he is that. Phone lines are open. I'd love to hear. And it doesn't have to be just about Dylan Thienemann, but I think it's more about the fact that we've been able to process everything. We've had time to kind of to look at everything and see where it is with the Chicago Bears team. And maybe you're feeling a little different than you were on Thursday. Or maybe you're, you know, maybe it's the opposite. Maybe you were feeling bad and now you feel good because of what you've been hearing. Because the interesting thing, Gabe Ramirez here on 104.3 The Score, about Dylan Thienemann is, you know, Bears fans hear safety at 25 and immediately think it's a luxury pick. Right? And I'm not necessarily sure that's what it is. It feels more like the Bears are telling you that they believe the defense is already structurally sound. Who they have on the... You got money. Let's not forget, there is money tied to it. And the general manager gave those guys the dollars. Grady Jarrett, Dio Odangbo. And think about your job if you're in a managerial role. You have to live with the decision you made. After you hire someone and realize it was a bad hiring, you got to go through the process to properly fire them, because you can't just pull the trigger, or your bosses will look at you like you're an idiot because you're the one that made that decision. So it's in your best interest to give those guys the benefit of the doubt. And again, the Bears thinking that the defense is structurally sound tells you that Ryan Poles is like, hey, Dennis Allen, I get you want an upgrade at that position, but man, bro, I've spent millions of dollars on Grady Jarrett and Dio Odangbo. I need you to coach them up. The same way they're saying that they're going to take Xavion and coach him up to be a better receiver. You saw that guy that he never played football, got drafted in the 7th round, a defensive end. Big dude, super athletic. The assumption is that coaches are going to be able to coach him up into that. So they want a guy that can erase those mistakes. And that's what they think Dylan Thienemann could be, a guy that can contribute. Because Thienemann isn't just a tackler, which is what I said is my favorite part of his game. He is a range piece like Mike Renner mentioned when we talked to him earlier. Some would say a, a chaos cleaner, finding the right moments to kind of impose his will on teams. He's the kind of player that lets you, you know, lets your corners play a little bit more aggressively. Your linebackers can play faster because you know you got a guy that's back there that gives you the flexibility because he can cover the ground on the football field. Now, if you want a defensive line, like I did, I get it, totally fair, but it, again, I think the draft says more about the confidence of the Chicago Bears, that they didn't panic. They didn't succumb to, you know, which obviously no general manager or coach should do, but to the chorus of the crowd. And that's what makes it fascinating. That's what makes the draft where you're like, damn, you love Ben Johnson because of his cocky arrogance, his arrogant confidence. And when you go out and draft the guys that you did, that arrogant confidence is written all over. And again, in the best way. You hear it and it sounds negative, but I mean, if Dieneman becomes a true playmaker, nobody's going to care that he was just a safety. Nobody. Nobody's going to care. If he's out there causing interceptions, tackle for losses, on third and two, he's stuffing the running back, you're not going to care about a defensive lineman because you guess what? Dylan Thielemann is your defensive lineman that's stopping the runs.
I can criticize the Sam Roush and Xavier Thomas pick. The Xavier Thomas pick, I'll make a case for. It was early. Like, you needed a receiver, but it was a couple rounds early. The Sam Roush pick, I was like, all right, what are you doing? But you could just listen to Ben Johnson and immediately become sold. Like, how can you not buy everything this guy is selling? Like, he took a dead in the water five win, it felt like less than five win team the year prior, and took him to the divisional round damn near the NFC Championship. If you're not buying that he is continuously pouring all this stock into be a top, not top five, top three offense this season and having this Bears team an even bigger contention, get rid of all the non-defensive picks or non-defensive line picks. I don't know what to say.
Yeah. I mean, and I know that's what they think. And that's what most people think. Because you're still talking about an offense where DJ Moore is gone. Like, think about that. Your DJ Moore is gone, and the and your center retired, your left tackle tore his patellar tendon, and you still have, again, this cocky arrogance that you'll be a top three offense in the league because it's year two. I mean, I'm glad it's my team.
Doesn't it feel weird to start to think this way now?
Well, I think, listen, Bears fans, we've always had this blind faith in our coaches, right? In our players, for that matter. And so it's no different. Like, that part isn't different. Starting a season thinking optimistically, that doesn't change. And so now, instead of saying, oh, yeah, we got David Terrell at number eight, wide receiver, Michigan. We got David Terrell. He's going to be a killer. Kevin White, I'm telling you, the Bears did it this time. Hall of Famer, baby. Now we're just optimistic about the coach. Think about that. We've been hurt so bad that we aren't even optimistic about our player. Sam Rouse, dog. He's going to kill it. Big boy, scoring touchdowns, end zone threat. No, nobody's saying that. Logan Jones, hell yeah. Olin Krutz 2.0. Can't wait to shore up the offense. Nobody's saying that. But they are saying that about Ben Johnson. And I think that's where the uncharted territory is. Where you have faith in Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson operating in tandem to continue to make the team better. Because let's be very clear. And I know that a lot of people are rolling their eyes about what I'm saying about Ryan Poles. But over the course of his tenure with the Chicago Bears, where they were and where they are, and granted, luck is part of that, right? Whether it's Ben Johnson wanting to come here or the Carolina Panthers being the worst team in the league and give you the number one pick, those moves still have to be made. And Ryan Poles has definitely made this team better. And the hope, right, is that he'll continue to do just that. Let's go to the phone lines. Take some calls. 312-644-6767. Let's go to John out in Naperville. John, three members of this draft class, you think they could be starters?
By the end of the year, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, tell me the names. Well, Thieneman's already there.
So, yeah, Thieneman's already there. The center and the defensive back could also be starting by the end of the year.
Okay, Malik Muhammad.
Tariq Stevens. Malik Muhammad, because, you know, Tariq Stevenson, for whatever reason, starts off the year with like gangbusters, and then by the end of the year, he falls out of favor with the defensive coaching staff. So any draft class where you can get two starters and then by the end of the year, possibly three, I think you grade this draft class with at a minimum a B.
Yeah, that's a fair grade. I think it's fair because it's interesting, right, John, where we, over the last, Jesus, I don't even know how long, but we as Bears fans, are constantly looking for the impact player, right? Because the team's been so bad, you need someone to make an impact, right? And I think to your analysis where the team was good last year, 11 wins, won the North, won a playoff game. And so you're really just trying to improve in certain areas. And I was a firm supporter of drafting a cornerback in this draft. I was talking to anybody that would listen. I'm like, it's thin. You know, Jalen Johnson, are you not sure if he's going to get hurt? You know, they needed Nashon Wright last year. You're going to need someone else. And that would be great if they can get him, secure somebody like that in the third round. And I was just talking to Chris Emma about that, where the Sam Roush pick, you like it, but could you have gotten a better cornerback at that position? You know what I'm saying? Like, could there have been somebody better there? So starting, maybe Malik Muhammad starting by way of an injury, but I can't imagine he would supplant a Tyreek Stevenson. And then Logan Jones, I think the same thing. I think that'd be a worst case scenario, right? If Jones is starting by the end of the season, that means something went wrong at the center position, whether that's an injury or not handling the outside zone as well. But so the only surefire one is Thieneman in that case. But you're right. If they all are starting or contributing at a high level, John, then you got to give it a B, right? What else could you give it?
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and don't forget, too, it could be performance or injury. And if that's the case, you know, hopefully it happens later in the year. But at the same time, at least they're on track for the center. You know, the center could start next year.
Right. Which I'm all for.
Which is the plan. So in that case, at a minimum, you've got two. And then, if Malik Muhammad pushes Tariq Stevenson to play at a near Pro Bowl level all year, then great, he did his job, and we have quality depth. And when you're drafting at 25, because you know we're not drafting in the top 15 anymore,
right?
At least for this year, this is what we're going to get. You know, we're adding quality depth. How many impact players do the Kansas City Chiefs get year over year? The Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, those guys will find the needle in the haystack from time to time, and I think we will too. So at the same time, what we're looking at is actually not that bad a draft, especially if we get the starter quality players out of it, regardless of position, because we're going to need that, especially come after next season when we got to pay Caleb.
I agree, man. Thanks for the call, John. You bring up a great point. You know, Malik Muhammad also said that, like the majority of the people that they've drafted, he's a guy that can play nickel also. He said, I can play inside too. So, you know, if Kyler Gordon goes down, you have someone that could step in, and you don't necessarily need to go out and get a free agent veteran to try to step into that place. You can build somebody there that can play both of those positions. And it'd be interesting to see. But what does our next guest think about guys like Malik Muhammad and Sam Roush? And does he agree with the B grading that John from Naperville just gave out? Jacob Infante, Director of Media Partnerships at PFSN, Bears and NFL draft contributor for Windy City Gridiron. He's going to hang out with us next. And he is going to describe his roller coaster of emotions that he felt over the course of the draft and those 3 days. And then don't forget, 8:05 pregame begins. Cubs, Padres, Zach Zabin got you on that one. It's Gabe Ramirez. Damn, don't know my last name. It's Gabe Ramirez leading you up to that right here on 104.3 The Score.
I thought we were disciplined. Again, we said this a few times, just following the board and the best player that was available to us. I think one thing that we take real seriously is each year we'll go back and review our process and review the draft and see where we could have done something a little bit different, learn from that, and then just keep getting better as we go. But I like the approach that we had. came away with some really good players. And like I've said before, with any position, we're going to stay active, see what opportunities pop up. And if we can improve our football team, we'll do it.
Active is what they might be if they want to win the hearts of half of the fans in Chicago, because the other half, you know, are behind exactly what happened. It is Gabe Ramirez right here on 104.3 The Score. And right now we get the opportunity to chat a little bit more draft with our next guest. He's the Director of Media Partnerships at PFSN, and he covers the Bears in the NFL draft on Windy City Gridiron. Good friend of the station, Jacob Infante. What's up, Jacob? How are you, man?
Hey, what's up? I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
It.
Of course. Now, Jacob, you know, I read your stuff, man. You know, it seems like you studied this class deeper than almost anybody locally. But when the whole weekend was over, did you walk away thinking, right? Because that's the big question, that the Bears got better, or you think they left too much, you know, maybe meat on the draft board for you?
I definitely think they got deeper. As far as better goes, I mean, I think we'll have to wait and see. But I do like the one thing I like about this class is you can pinpoint basically everybody and say, there's a specific niche that I can see this player filling right away. To where, I mean, there are some times where it's like, oh, I don't really know what kind of role this guy's going to play in year one. I feel like, obviously, the concern is, what's the defensive line going to look like next year? And I do think that you talk about leaving a lot of meat on the bone. That's definitely what I'd use to describe the defensive line situation. But I do think that on both sides of the ball, they had some pretty solid picks. Some confusing ones as well, you know, some whether it's positional value or just overall value. A couple picks came out of left field, but I like what they did on defense with the picks that he did make there. And offense, you know, some of those picks kind of surprised me, but I do think that they got good fits for the system, and you know, those players should be able to fit into specific roles right away.
It's interesting you say that, because it seems like versatility was a key component, right? Like a statistically significant variable for the Bears when deciding which players they were going to take or which were going to be higher on their board. And I know in your final seven-round mock draft, you had the Bears taking T.J. Parker. And I posed this question earlier, and specifically to David Hall. We were texting each other, and I was like, yo, if the Bears took – or, you know, option A is T.J. Parker at 25, Emmanuel McNeil Warren at 57, and Jones at 60, or what the Bears did with their first three picks. You know, comparing those two in your mind, especially with the fact that you had T.J. Parker there, because that was the same person who I used, just because he was available in the second round. But when you're looking at those two, you know, buckets, so to speak, you know, is one better than the other? Or because your point about need, are they similar?
I think there are some similarities. I mean, if you asked me going into it, I maybe would have said I'd rather go Parker, McNeil, Warren, and Jones at 60. But I do think it would have been, if you told anybody that McNeil Warren would have been available that late in the second round, I don't think anyone would have believed you. I don't think the Bears would have expected McNeil Warren to fall that far into the second round. If they had the power of hindsight, I don't know, but I don't know what they'd end up doing. But Thieneman, I love the value that they got with him at 25. I mean, to me, he was a clear-cut top 20 player in this class, if not higher. And I just assumed it was a foregone conclusion that he'd go off the board at 18 to the Vikings if he was still available there. But they went in a different direction, surprised a lot of people, and then Thieneman fell right into Chicago's laps. I will say Logan Jones, in my opinion, is a fantastic fit for the offense that Ben Johnson wants to run. He matches the athletic requirements. He's battle-tested at the Big Ten. You think about how many really talented defensive tackles, especially from schools like Ohio State and Michigan, you know, that are from those schools, but just all over the board, too, that you're playing on a weekly basis. Athletically, physically, the tenacity that he plays with as well. So I definitely think the big concern, obviously, is what's the defensive line going to look like? I know Ryan Poles mentioned he has Shamar Stewart as a defensive end. Did I say Shamar Stewart or Shamar Turner?
Turner. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, Shamar Turner, you have a defensive end. He started off a defensive tackle, switched over to DN, got hurt. I think he was more productive at A&M as an edge rusher. His film popped a little bit more when he was rushing off the edge compared to when he was in the interior, when they brought in Nick Scorton and Shamar Stewart came into the mix there as well. So you're betting on Turner coming back. You're betting on Booker continuing to develop the way he has. Dio Odeyingbo factoring into the rotation as well. I would have liked some sort of insurance policy, but at the same time, you do have a couple edge rushers that have some upside to work with. So, I mean, there are a lot of question marks there.
Yeah.
But I think Thieneman was too good a value to pass up at 25. And then, you know, all things considered, they still got the center they wanted, Logan Jones. So I wouldn't say that, you know, the start to the draft was bad by any means, even though, you know, Parker, McNeil, Warren, and Jones does sound like an incredible haul as well.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been a bad one. We're talking to Jacob Uvani, Director of Media Partnerships at PFSN, and covers the Bears in the NFL draft for Windy City Gridiron. You know, you mentioned being battle tested with Logan Jones, right? And I think that's what the Bears saw in Darnell Wright, right? Playing, you know, right tackle or at some points left, going up against fierce competitors week in and week out, you know, in his respective conference. And I feel like, and there were people, I can't remember the guy from Alabama that was like, yeah, Darnell Wright's the best tackle I went up against all season long. And you love those kind of moments. And, of course, the Big Ten, you know, with the amount of teams that they had with high-quality players, you love a guy like that is battle-tested. You also said you talked a lot about fit, right? Not only on the defensive line, but, you know, with the offenses – excuse me, fit on the offense, but I'm talking about defense specifically. You called Thieneman a seamless fit in Chicago. And I think we've all heard that, you know, it's versatility, but what did you see specifically that you liked about him that you said that makes you say he is a seamless fit?
Yeah, so I definitely point to the versatility, like you mentioned. I think his ability to play in a two high shell, to the cover single high, and like that center fielder sort of role, to cover underneath, as you know, in a robber sort of situation, in that, you know, cover one, cover three sort of call. But also to play in the box, to play in the slot in, you know, nickel situations as well. I think that having a guy who's intelligent enough to play in all those alignments and to understand his assignment on the field, I think that it really gives Dennis Allen the benefit of being able to disguise route concepts. I think with, you know, Kevin Byard and Jaquan Brisker, I mean, that's a pretty solid safety duo. But, you know, what you saw is what you got. I didn't think Brisker had as much, you know, had as much versatility. Brisker could play in the box a little bit, but I do think that Kobe Bryant and Dylan Thieneman, not only, you know, a younger duo, but a faster duo as well. Thieneman, you see, you know, running 4.3 speed at the combine. You can see that on tape with just how well he accelerates downhill, whether it's, you know, him jumping on a route to get out in front of the ball and make a play, or it's him coming down and run support to, you know, or after the catch to make the tackle. I mean, he plays incredibly hard and incredibly fast. So that's another thing too, I think, that makes him a good fit in this defense. I mean, Chicago, you know, kept saying, and the general consensus was, we're going to get faster this year, especially on defense. And they certainly did that. I mean, you know, bringing in Kobe Bryant in free agency, bringing in Devin Bush in free agency, but now Thieneman in the mix as well as a likely day one starter. I think his intelligence, his ability to play all over the field, that impressive straight line speed, and that the physicality too, the willingness to hit, the willingness to tackle, and just how well his form as a tackler improved over the course of his collegiate career. I think that's another thing too. So Thieneman, like I said, I had as a true top 20 player on my board. I don't think that was a value they could have passed up.
Yeah, and I think that's why they did it. And, you know, somebody else that, you know, you were clearly fired up about, and I'm sure you were happy that they, you know, got rid of their 2 sevenths to trade up, Jordan Vanderberg. What do you see there, right? Because I think not a lot of people are talking about what potential impact he could have on the team.
Yeah, so with Vandenberg, I think you're looking at a moldable ball of clay. I mean, the relative athletic score, you know, it's a score out of 10. Usually, you know, you take all these metrics like height, weight, 40-yard dash, 10-yard split, bench, agility, jumping drill, stuff like that, all to factor in and put a score on how good of an athlete a player is. Jordan Vandenberg scored a perfect 10. And out of the database of, you know, however, like a couple thousand defensive tackles I think there have been over the last few decades, Vandenberg was number 2. Overall, out of all of them. So just to put that into perspective, the short area quickness really shines on tape, just how quick he is off the ball. And once he gets out in space, the closing speed, whether it's him going after a quarterback or, you know, he's working off a block on a, you know, on a running back screen to be able to chase down a ball carrier, really impressive level of athleticism. He's lower to the ground, good pad level, does a good job of distributing his weight properly, and he's got just really good raw weight room strength. I mean, he's got a powerful anchor, packs a mean punch at the point of attack, and yeah, I do think that he's a little rough around the edges. I'd like to see him diversify his pass rushing arsenal and how well he uses his hands to, you know, win in a variety of different ways. As of right now, I think it's a lot of him just being bigger and stronger and faster than everybody. But I think the athleticism, the strength, and the motor are all there. So you're looking at a guy who, when you look at Dennis Allen's defense, one thing they were missing last year and something that he's thrived with in pass stops, especially with the Saints, is having that athleticism along the interior, that ability to, you know, penetrate opposing backfields up the middle and then create opportunities for those edge rushers to clean up off of blocks and make tackles and make sacks. I think Vandenberg has the potential to do that. Now, in year one, I don't know how big that impact is going to be, but I do think in the long term, his level of athletic profile is definitely something to keep into account. And, I mean, keep in mind, too, he's a two-time All-ACC player. He was first-team All-ACC
Wow. Didn't know that.
In 2025. So, you know, he has some, you know, recognition to work with as well. It's not like, oh, he was bad in college. He was really good in college, quite frankly. It's just a matter of, you know, the NFL translatability. You know, some of the way he wins isn't going to work all the time in the NFL, but the upside in the long run with him is really, really impressive.
Yeah, and we love moments like that, right? Because those are the ones where you say, okay, I do feel like they're savvy in later rounds with certain moves. I mean, obviously Kyle Manungai, obviously Vandenberg in this situation. You love moments like that, and I think that's what's cool about it. All right, Jacob, before I get you out of here, draft's over. Is your life, are you bored now? Or are you just, you know, like, are you going to Cabo? Like, what are you doing right now that the draft's over?
It's a good question. I mean, I flew back on Sunday. I got back and I'm like, all right, well now what? So I decided as my way to unwind, I decided to start watching 2027 draft tape. So call it a sickness, whatever you want to call it. But I've already started getting into it. I'm trying to figure out which defensive lineman that they're going to pass on next year.
Wow.
I say tongue in cheek, but I do love the moving on to new prospects and having these new debates and having these new, oh, where's this guy going to fit in the NFL? You know, looking at that.
Of course.
I am making sure I'm getting my rest a little bit here every once in a while, but so maybe at a more of a leisurely pace. But I'm enjoying, you know, getting a little bit of, you know, getting my feet wet with some of this 2027 class for sure.
Oh man. Well, you're a sick man and we're happy that we are your medicine for that stuff right there. Hey, Jacob, thanks for hanging out with me today, man. Great stuff today as always.
I appreciate it again. Thank you so much.
Of course. Jacob Infante, Director of Media Partnerships at PFSN. And he covers the Bears in the NFL draft, Windy City Gridiron. Listen, when you're that good. Right. Like, just think about it. I mean, you have to know so many players, the ins and outs, the reasoning behind things. And, you know, when you could throw any player out there, because it's not just the ones you got. Right. Like, we know, we as analysts locally, we know who the Bears got and we could tell you everything about those guys. But when you're talking about people that they missed on, you know, you have a couple of names here and there because you were looking at positions of need. A guy like Jacob, he's looking at everybody, man. So go ahead and follow him. Jacob Infante 24 on X. He got some great stuff for you, and he's locked in. He loves the Vandenberg kid. He sold me on the – right? Right, baby T? I was like, okay. I feel – because what again, I text David about this stuff. So David and I are texting. And the picture of Vandenberg with his arms lifted up that they posted, I'm like, man, I just need a little more definition. You know, a little more –
Also, I don't know if this does anything for you. Georgia Tech has always been one of those schools that, like, you just think of, like, physical, like, hard-nosed football. Not a lot of air raid, just a lot of ground and pound right. Ready to run through you. So that's the kind of the vibe that I've been getting from Vandenberg early on.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an ACC person and, you know, or first, like I said, first team all ACC, you've played some good teams. And like you said, you got the recognition there. Maybe there were just a couple of traits that they, you know, didn't necessarily pop out to other GMs and teams, but the Bears felt strongly enough to trade, you know, two picks to get up to get him. And hopefully he's a guy that, you know, Listen, Austin Booker was good, just got hurt, right? Jerron Dexter is good. Zach Pickens, okay, he was athletic, but it didn't work out. So the hope is that, you know, you're able to develop these guys on the defensive line and really just, you know, continue to add depth pieces that can help you out as you continue to make this playoff run. All right, we got one more break before we get up out of here. And, of course, the Chicago Cubs are taking on the San Diego Padres. Cubs lost 2 out of 3 to the Dodgers, but the one victory was part of a big win streak that they were on. So what's going to happen against San Diego tonight? Matthew Boyd's on the mound. Moises Ballesteros is going to be catching today. So we'll talk a little bit about the game, and then we'll hand it off to Zach Zaidman at 8:05 is when his pregame begins. It's Gabe Ramirez leading you right into Cubs Padres on the other side. Don't go anywhere. It's 104-3 The Score.
Yep, it's a bouncing ball to the right side. This could do it. The toss to first in time, and the Dodgers come back to win the series after the Cubs grabbed the opener on Friday night. The Dodgers win the final two, and they take the series 2 out of 3.
Gabe Ramirez right here on 104.3 The Score, leading you right into Cubs pregame. That's going to be with Zach Zaidman. That kicks off at 8:05, first pitch, 8:40 p.m. Cubs taking on the San Diego Padres. And this team definitely came off a wild weekend in L.A. where, you know, they ran the win streak to 10 games Friday night. Shout out to them. Got the 6-4 comeback win over the Dodgers. And then for a minute, it felt like they were becoming one of the best stories in baseball. They already were with the win streak that they were on. Then reality kind of hit a little bit. No Shohei Ohtani, no Yamamoto, didn't have to face either one of them. Got punched back hard in the last 2 days, 12-4 on Saturday, then blanked on Sunday. So instead of leaving L.A. to go to San Diego with a statement series win, they kind of got reminded, right, that you can't live on adrenaline forever against elite teams in Major League Baseball. Now they go to San Diego, and it really is an interesting reset spot. These are the ones that are tricky because you can be on a win streak, and then it's kind of how it gets. It's kind of like life, right? You have a couple victories, but they're small victories, and then all of a sudden, you know, you face the juggernaut. Let's say a promotion you wanted, or you know, you're asking your wife for a night out with the fellas, or whatever. You've built yourself up to that, and then reality comes and just kind of smacks you in the face. And then it's about what you do after that, right? Because you were elite. You were on a hell of a win streak, longest since 2016. And then all of a sudden you're saying to yourself, okay, you know, so does the series against the Dodgers act as some sort of leveler in your psyche for Cubs players and staff? Or do you look at the San Diego Padres, you know, a team that's comparable to the Cubs right now, and say, this is how we can right the ship? Cubs go straight into San Diego, and you know, Padres are 18-9, Cubs are 17-11, and the series almost feels like a sick test. Here, we're going to give you the Dodgers at the end of this win streak. Oh, they beat you good. Here's the San Diego Padres. And so you get to learn a lot, whether or not the 10-game heater was proof that the Cubs are legit, or if the Dodgers really exposed, you know, where this Cubs roster is still a bit vulnerable. So one of my good homies, Elise Menneker, she talked a little bit about on Marquee Sports Network, which, by the way, you can catch me on there hosting Inside the Fire, the Chicago Fire TV show. So whenever you catch that on the airwaves, shout out to my Marquee family. No, I'm just playing. I'm like a stepchild over there. But Elise Menneker, the homie, sister of Showbiz Shelly, by the way, who I used to work with on MP96, She did a great job breaking down why the Cubs struggled against LA.
And these at bats, you know, like this is one from Nico Horner, and guys, just you're looking for that big hit, which was the story when they were losing before the win streak, and just trying to put balls in plays. You have some strikeouts again, like we saw the night before. This is tough because you mentioned with runners on, 0-for-20. Runners in scoring position, 0-for-8. 0-for-6 in the first two innings.
You just want to knock with someone on base.
In those first two innings, that was really your best opportunity. And like I said, you don't know when it's going to come, but that's why when you have bases loaded or just the runners in those scoring opportunities, you have to try to have that hit. It's not easy.
Sure.
I mean, Justin Roblesky he lowered his ERA today. He came in with 1.88. It's 1.5 now.
He's really good.
So this guy is good. He doesn't give up the long ball. So that's part of the challenge, because if you're going to score against him, mm-hmm. you're trying to string things together, which also isn't really easy when you're looking for that big hit. Not really easy, because so far no one has had the big hit against yeah. him. I mean, in terms of hitting it out of the park.
Sure.
So it's difficult against this Dodgers team. It's difficult when you go down three early, but that was the challenge today. And unfortunately, Cubs shut out.
Yeah, I mean, that was tough on Sunday, but, you know, Saturday, no different, right? And they scored in four straight innings on Saturday, had nine hits, so the offense wasn't dead. It was just more about run prevention, right? Colin Ray took the loss. Cubs pitching gave up 14 hits on Saturday. So, again, it's, like, you know, I talked about this on the Chicago Lead on Chicago Sports Network. Check me out, 6 o'clock. And I talked about where, you know, last season for the Chicago Cubs, there were moments where the pitching staff was great, the starting pitching, because now you could break that down on a more micro level. The starting pitching was great, bullpen was terrible. Bullpen was great, starting pitching's off. Starting pitching, bullpen's great, hitting's off. Hitting's great, it's like it's never aligned. And I think during that 10-game win streak, what you were seeing was the back half of that lineup coming through, guys like Dansby Swanson, PCA starting to hit. And then you get Bregman at the top of the order, you know, in the middle, top to middle of the order, coming through as well, guys that weren't necessarily doing that at the beginning of the season. So, I mean, you know, the offense is there, but here we go again, where, you know, the offense came through, but then the pitching wasn't there. And then obviously on Sunday, you know, the offense couldn't come through, and it was flat offense, four hits, got shut out, committed the two errors that were crucial. Give up three runs in the first inning. I mean, that will take it out of you, right? Especially when the series is split and you're trying to, you know, salvage a game here. But Craig Counsel also talked about, you know, the fact that the Cubs couldn't come up with a big hit in this one.
We had, you know, two big chances, really, and we had two, you know, I thought the big at-bats were the two 3-0 counts that, you know, he ended up getting a strikeout on. So in the first, he got a strikeout with Say on a 3-0 count, and then I think it was the third or the fourth, he got the strikeout with Nico with a 3-0 count, with bases loaded, and those are, you know, and a strike, you know, coming back from that, getting a strikeout, you know, those are our big opportunities, right? You know, you need to kind of reverse one of those situations, and we got runs on the board. So, you know, we created two pretty good opportunities, looking really good at a 3-0 count, men in scoring position, and he got out of it.
Well, the good thing in baseball is you get to play another series, and regardless of whether or not the Padres are considered or are a good team in the present, it doesn't matter, right? You got to look internally. The Cubs only, the biggest foe for the Chicago Cubs is themselves. And tonight, Matthew Boyd pitching, going up against Randy Vasquez, has had himself a hell of a start to the season. On paper, Padres look like they have the edge tonight because Boyd's ERA is inflated all the way to 5.79. But, you know, there's reason to suggest that, you know, Boyd might have himself a night tonight. Then Edward Cabrera pitches against Walker Buehler tomorrow. And then Jameson Taillon and Matt Waldron round out the three-game series. So don't panic, though, over those two losses, Cubs fans. You guys will be all right. Don't overrate the 10-game win streak either, though. And again, as I mentioned, it doesn't matter even what happens in the series against the Padres. The fact of the matter is the Cubs will make the playoffs. And as long as the team is right and Craig Counsell is coaching his tail off like we know he will, then it's not going to be a big deal, right? The Cubs don't need to win every big series. They need to show that they can absorb a punch from the Dodgers and respond against another playoff team immediately, like right now. And again, you get the opportunity to hear that right here on 104.3 The Score. So I want to shout out my guests for today, because we had ourselves a couple that were great. First up, of course, Mike Renner, hanging out with us, and then from CBS Sports, and then Jacob Infante from Windy City Gridiron. I had some great stuff today. Make sure you go ahead and listen to that back if you get the chance. Want to thank Tyler Farragaw for producing today.
Baby T. I said that's his radio name. Who gave you that name? It was me.
Never forget that. You're welcome, my friend. Got to put it on a t-shirt. A baby T, maybe. Hey.
Oh, Gabe, you just unlocked a whole new level of baby T right there.
That jokes are on fire. All right. Let's see. What's today? Tuesday? Today's Tuesday?
Monday.
Monday. Damn. See, I worked too much. I will be on Thursday filling in for Lawrence Holmes. I'll be in 2 to 6. Friday, you catch me on the Chicago Lead on Chicago Sports Network. And then Saturday, Chicago Fire. I didn't even get a chance to talk about the Fire. They won 5-0 on Saturday. The boys are hot, and they're playing at home on Saturday. Make sure you're there for it so you can check them out. All right, Cubs baseball coming up next. Zach Zabin got you on the other side. Mi gente, that means my people. Hasta la próxima, that means until next time. I am Gabe Ramirez, and this is Chicago Sports Radio 104.3 The Score.